I think it's time to get into some Job. What do you think? So I mentioned it. I mentioned it already. We have this this new Defender Bible at Skywatch at from Defender Publishing. It's the Defender Bible limited edition King James version with expanded Apocrypha. This thing is five pounds. It's a thick, like it's nice. It's actually looks really good too. It's large print. It's easy to read, and again, it's King James. But I picked a couple of books to read some passages from. A lot of you have been reaching out to me and asking me because there's kind of three areas that I deal a lot in right now, and I'm kind of putting, well, maybe it's four, and I'm kind of putting a fifth one in there coming up. But Christianity, obviously, politics. Science, you know, quantum physics stuff, and weird conspiratorial fringy kind of stuff, you know, and then now I'm adding psychology onto that. I like just exploring and doing a lot of different things, but still from, you know, a solid framework that is Josh Beck, but, you know, love it or hate it, but, so I've done extensive work in a lot of that, but the most request that I get is about the Christian Bible stuff, which it's easy for me to you know, I work in full-time ministry, so I'm in this stuff every single day, all day, every day, all day. You know, politics to me is a break. You know, politics is like a fun break for me, where you know, I get a little bit of, I get to relax a little bit and do something fun, like politics, conservative politics, or human psychology or something. You know, that to me is just kind of fun. So it's easy for me to forget that not everybody lives their lives like that. And so I understand, and I'm glad that you guys are reaching out and talking to me more about what you want, because that's what this whole show is based on. It's based on what you, the audience, wants. And I get requests for that more than anything else. You know, more than Nephilim stuff or Bigfoot stuff or alien stuff, or quantum physics or you know, any of that. More often than not, I get just Bible stuff, just solid Christian theological Bible stuff. I did a video the other day on theoxyny. And now this channel is still being shadow banned like crazy. So when I say how many views I got, it's not going to sound impressive, especially since I have, you know, 20,000 some odd subscribers. But that video within a day got 600 views, which is not a lot, but for my channel, that is a lot. I'm used to my videos capping out at 100 or 200 if I'm lucky to even get that much. But so there's a need for it, and I'm glad that you guys have been reaching out and talking to me about wanting to do that. So I thought, well, how about in every show we just read some from the Bible? And now that we have this Defender Bible, it has the Apocrypha in it. And some people might ask, well, why put the Apocrypha in there? That's not inspired text, which I would agree it's not. But it's interesting to know what first century Jews were reading at the same time they were reading the same stuff that's in our Bible today, because it helps us understand what their worldview was. Now, it doesn't mean that you can take every letter of the Apocrypha and every word and every phrase as solid God-inspired biblical truth. You know, you can't really do that with that. It's not like the Bible in that capacity. But these are this helps you get in the head of the culture at the time. It would be like if somebody 1,000 years from now wanted to know about our culture and wanted to know how we viewed the Bible. You know, they might find some writings from some pastors that were drawing analogies from like Star Wars or something like that. So they might think, well, what is Star Wars? So let's look into that. Let's find that. Now, of course, Star Wars isn't true, but it would help them understand from our culture some of the analogies that we might make or some of the comparisons. You know, it doesn't mean that Star Wars has anything to do with the Bible. Obviously, it doesn't. I mean, but you can make comparisons, you know, with stuff like that. Certainly people have made comparisons with Superman and Jesus. You know, that Superman is kind of a retelling of the Jesus story in a modern American Western culture. So in 1,000 years from now, if somebody wanted to understand that connection, well, they'd have to go and look at what Superman was, you know, and they'd have to learn about that. Doesn't mean that Superman's real. Doesn't mean that any word of the Superman mythos is accurate or correct. But it helps get in the head of our culture, the type of stuff that we watch and we consume and we talk about, you know, movies and books that we might read, stuff like that. So that is what the Apocrypha is to the Bible. You know, I mean, it's not divinely inspired text, but it was very relevant in the culture of the time, and it helps us kind of understand some of the other things that are God-inspired, that are written. Because, you know, again, it was written, the Bible was written for everybody in the world for all time, but it was written to a certain culture in a certain time. So the more we know about that culture, the more it helps. Now, I picked Job and Enoch because at first I was just going to do the Apocrypha, but I thought it'd be good to have some, and we are going to do Enoch later in the show, but I thought it would be good to have some balance and have just a good solid Old Testament book. And I picked Job because the common conception is that it's the oldest Old Testament book. It's the oldest book written, you know, in the Bible. Actually, that's not true. Now don't get upset with me. Just you know, hear me out. And actually, when I say hear me out, I actually mean go and look at what Michael Heiser said about it, and if you don't agree with it, you can complain to him. But sorry to throw you under the bus, Mike. But no, he actually knows way more about this than I do. But he's got an episode of Naked Bible podcast. You should go check it out. And it's the authorship and the age or something of the Book of Job. It's a recent episode at the time of this recording, so you should go check it out. But, you know, it turns out with Job, you know, the claim that Job is the oldest book in the Bible, we hear a lot, but we just take it for what it is, and we don't really go and look into it. You know, we don't really think to look into it to see if that's even true. Turns out there's really nothing to substantiate that claim. There's really nothing to say that it is. And of course, when we hear something like that, something that we believed for a long time, it's kind of a bummer at first, or, you know, we might even be hostile towards it and just want to say, no, that's not true. It is what it is. And, you know, anybody who says different but I would suggest, you know, before complaining about it or sending a bunch of hateful comments on YouTube or emails or something, look into what Mike said in the podcast. It's not very long. It's like an hour long. Look into his sources, because he cites all his sources. He's always really good about that. Look into his sources and then try to refute the sources, you know. And people are going to believe what they believe. But it's interesting. But still, I wanted to take that because it's the same with Enoch. A lot of people say that Enoch is incredibly old, the Book of Enoch. And there's not really a reason to believe that for similar reasons. It's an interesting book for sure, though. I wanted to pick those because they seem to have that in common, and I thought that would be a good place to start. So, and especially today, because I don't have an interview for you, I don't have an interview with anybody. But I wanted to do something, you know, special and just do a passage from Job, and then later on we'll do a passage from Enoch. If you're watching the daily video on this, then you can go back and watch the weekly video for the whole thing, or you can wait a few days and maybe at some point I'll put the Enoch one up, or maybe I already have. You know, sometimes I do these out of order. But so again, this is from the Defender Bible. Now, if you have one, go and grab it, because we'll read through this together. And the Book of Job, I have it bookmarked here, starts on page 596. So page 596, we're just going to start from the beginning. We're going to read some of it. I'm not going to do a whole ton of commentary unless we hit upon something I know. We won't get to it in this one because this is like chapter 40 or something. But when we get to the Leviathan part, I'll talk about that. Like, I'll talk about some stuff that I know, but I'm not going to be real heavy on commentary that I just don't know anything about. I just think it's interesting to just now if you don't have a copy of this, it is just the King James. So you could even go to BibleGateway.com or Blue Letter Bible. Blue Letter Bible is good because you get the Strong's Concordance with it. You can look up the Hebrew words and stuff. So we're just gonna start and read at least the first chapter. Maybe we'll do two chapters, maybe three. We'll just read till I'm sick of reading, I guess. And after this, if you're watching the weekly video, we're gonna talk about the Shroud of Turin next and how the image apparently seems to be moving, which is weird and something I want to talk about. So that's coming up after this. If you're watching this in the daily video again, you can find it in the weekly video or wait until the daily video comes out. But either way, make sure you subscribe. Okay, the book of Job. Chapter 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, and 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 she-asses, and that meant a different thing back then, and very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all men in the East. You know, it's interesting how different our culture is from ancient culture, just in how we value possessions, what makes a man wealthy or what makes a man successful. Back then, it was like livestock and all this stuff, and today it's like cars and phones and TVs and things like that. It's just, I'm not saying that it's necessarily, you know, better or worse. It's just interesting that it's different. Continuing on in verse 4, and his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. You know, it's interesting that he did that. I never picked this up before, but it's interesting that he did that, saying that he gave the offering not knowing if possibly, you know, his sons have sinned or if somebody sinned. You know, we'll do this offering because maybe they did, not because we know that they did, but maybe they did, just in case they did. And I wonder how many times we think of our relationship with God like that. Like, how many times is there a prayer like, you know, Lord, forgive me if I did anything that might have upset you today or that was wrong, and then teach me, you know, please teach me how that was wrong and why, and give me the motivation to change and be different. You know. That's interesting too, and I never picked up on that before. Continuing on in verse 6, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. Now, I will say, when it talks about sons of God there, that's angels. It's B'nai HaElohim in Hebrew. If you're on Blue Letter Bible, you can check that out. But that is angels. That's not human sons of God or anything like that. We're talking about angels here. So, and the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? Now, in there, I'll say that there are a couple people that have made the claim that it says in the earth, and then that's a hollow earth thing. Well, maybe if you're talking about a spiritual dimension, which I know Justin Falls got a lot of flack. Actually, Justin Falls got to get mad props because he did this. He did this cover design. His name is in this for doing the cover design. But you know, I've interviewed him. He actually works with me at Skywatch. He's a really good friend, and he's gotten a lot of flack because people have said that he did the Hollow Earth Chronicles, and it's like, well, if the earth were really hollow, then we'd know about it. But a lot of what he talks about is in a spiritual sense, you know, the bowels of the earth. And so some people will draw from that, you know, say, well, Satan was coming in and out, you know, he's in the earth and he's out of the earth, and that's a hollow earth deal. Spiritually, maybe. But again, it says the next line, it says, consider my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth. And we still get in the earth. Now, I don't have Blue Letter Bible open in front of me, but it would be interesting to know if that's the same Hebrew phrase. Maybe I am going to end up doing more commentary than I thought I would. Hopefully that's not annoying. If it is, leave me a comment and let me know, and I will try to keep it to a minimum. Continuing on, we are in verse 9. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." So the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. So that might be a little confusing with all the old English. Basically, Satan is like, well, God, the only reason that he loves you so much and he's so great is because you've given him everything. Look, he's got an awesome life, and you've given him all this cool stuff. So God's like, all right, well, we'll take that away. Go ahead, do what you want, Satan. Do what you want to him. Let's see if you're right. Let's just see if you're right. So it's interesting. It's not only a test of Job, but it's a test of Satan too. It's interesting to think about it that way. Verse 13, and there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabians fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the fire of God has fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. It's interesting, that phrase, the fire of God. I wonder if, because we in our 21st century American point of view, we tend to think of everything in literal terms. So we read that and we think, God sent a fire to kill those, kill all the animals and stuff. It could have just been lightning, and they might have interpreted it that way, but it still wouldn't have mattered. They didn't have as literal of a view of things in the ancient past that we do today. There were a lot of metaphors, a lot of analogies, a lot of sayings like that that meant other things. So it might not be now. I don't know for sure, but it might not be a literal God just decided to kill the animals. It could have been lightning, or it could have been some type of other naturally occurring fire that they interpreted as the fire of God, or it could actually have been a pillar of fire from the Lord. So that's interesting. We don't know. But verse 17, while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. So Job is clearly having a bad day. He's getting all this news all at once. And all of a sudden, his nice, orderly world is turned into chaos. It's just all chaotic and different. And if you're watching the weekly video, it's like what we talked about before, how when you have a phone, it's just your phone, but you're ignoring all the complexities that actually make the phone work, because that's what we as humans do. So Job had just his life. It's just his life. And he's ignoring all the little complexities that are going on in it until he doesn't have a choice, because calamity, chaos hits. It's like when you're not comparing it in severity, but it's like when your phone breaks. Now, all of a sudden, it's not this just perfect one unit that works. Now, it's a collection of incredibly complex systems that you don't know how to navigate through and you don't know anything about. It's the same idea here. Again, this is a lot more severe because people are dying and animals are dying and stuff. But it's the same kind of idea. He can't live in his bliss anymore, where just things work. Now everything is impossibly complex, and he's got to navigate that. So it's interesting. Again, he's having a bad day. Verse 20, then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell upon the ground and worshiped and said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Be blessed. Blessed be to the name of the Lord in all this, Job sinned not nor charged God foolishly. So at least he's able, even though the chaos is hitting, he knows that there's a more powerful God. And he says, okay, well, this is terrible, but it's still God. You know, God is still the one in control over all this. It's not like, you know, it's not like Leviathan, the chaos dragon, had won one over on God, had gotten something over on God. God knew what was going on and Job trusted him. Now that's going to become harder to do. But, you know, Job didn't sin. So chapter 2, again, there was a day when the sons of God, again, angels, came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, from whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord, saying, from going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth? A perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast in he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord. So maybe it was a fire from the God, because he, you know, God is telling Satan here, you know, thou movest me against him to destroy him. Now, does that mean that he just removes his hand of protection and the enemy is allowed to come in, or is God actively doing things? So that's an interesting question to consider. Verse 4, chapter 2, verse 4, and Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. So Satan is like, okay, well, you didn't do enough. You know, if you push it further, he'll curse, you know, because he loves his life more than he loves you. That's basically what Satan is saying here to God. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. So he's telling Satan, you know, you can do whatever you want to him, just don't kill him. That's the only thing you can't do, but you can do whatever else you want. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes and said to said his wife unto him. So his wife is speaking to him. Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. So to a really loving wife, right? But it also shows, you know, this woman, and, you know, typically we read something like that and we think, wow, what was the matter with her? Well, she just lost all of her kids, you know, or she's probably going to die anyway because her husband can't support her anymore now that there's no livestock. I mean, it was the ancient world. It was a different time where you needed that stuff to even survive. It's a different state than like if your TV broke or your cell phone broke or something like that. It's a totally different deal. Plus, all of her kids died. Not excusing it, you know, because obviously, you know, men and women should stand by each other if they're married, but still you can get a little bit more understanding to where she's coming from. And we typically tend to read over that and think, wow, what a jerk. And, you know, that's probably right to a certain point. But, you know, I think given the chance, a lot of us would probably be more like Job's wife than we like to think. I think a lot of us, if we were put in a situation that was as dire as that, we might more easily even fall into that mindset of, well, just who cares? Just curse God and die. Just forget the whole thing then, you know. So interesting. Verse 10, but he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips. So he's saying, well, God gave us all these good things. So what, we can't expect bad things to happen to us because God gave us some good things. You know, it's kind of like how you are with your kids. You can give your kids good things. You can teach them good things. But that doesn't mean that accidents aren't going to happen. That doesn't mean that the world isn't going to happen. Now, it's a little bit different because we're not omnipotent. You know, we don't have full control over everything that happens in our kids' lives. But at the same time, to a kid, we do. To your child, if they're young enough, we can do anything. We can lift a house. You know, we can do anything, and surely we can protect them in any situation. So when that fantasy is shattered, and when a child realizes that it doesn't work like that, it's distressing, and that's why it's a good idea to teach your kids. You know, look, this is why you have to behave, and why you got to do good, because I'm not always around. I'm not always there. I can't protect you from literally everything in the world. Bad stuff happens, And I'm going to teach you how you can minimize those, you know, probably use it in different words that a kid can understand. But it's similar to God, whereas like I think sometimes we have this fantasy of God where we think, you know, God, especially when life is going good, you know, well, life is going good. God is giving good things. God is blessing everything. And then we project that onto the world. God has good things for the world and he's got good things for this. But then, bam, calamity hits. And maybe your brother dies or you get cancer or just some horrible thing happens and it shatters that fantasy and it's devastating. And then through that, the only thing you can do in that chaos is to just say, well, okay, God, you got this. But see, it seems like Job didn't have that fantasy. It seems like Job, at least before this, had realized, yeah, things are good, but it doesn't mean they always will be. Because that's his response to his wife, is that what? Should we expect only good things and then no bad things should happen? I mean, that life just does not work that way. We enjoyed good things for a while. You know, should we not expect bad things to happen too? That's no excuse to curse God. Like, that's a terrible attitude you have. You're like a foolish woman, you know, all these things. And I think we typically, that's a good lesson for us to keep in mind when, and it will, when calamity hits, when chaos enters into our lives. And instead of using that as an excuse to curse God and to fall into that sin of pride, because if you're cursing God, if you're mad at God, you're elevating yourself above God. You know that, right? I mean, you'd have to be, otherwise you'd have no reason to be angry with him. But I think that it speaks to our pride nature as human beings, and we can use chaos. And some of this is unconscious, but I think some of it can be completely recognized. But we tend to use those situations as excuses to fall into the comfort of pride. Maybe that's a way to look at it, a human comfort of pride, because we don't always understand spiritual things. We know spiritual things that we're taught are difficult, and they usually mean sacrifice. They usually mean a lot of things that we don't want to do in the moment, but they are for more reward later, even if it means in eternity, you know, with eternal life and all that. But it gives us an excuse. So, and I think, you know, I think internally we all know we're going to have to answer to God someday for everything we say and everything we do. We know that. I think even atheists know that. I think, but especially us as Christians, we know that. And then so we might think from our human understanding, and again, this is sort of unconsciously, it's like subconsciously, because I don't think we really sit down to take time to think about it. But I think that we know that. We know that we're going to have to answer to God. And if things don't work out and then we get mad at God, then we sort of think in the back of our minds, when I stand and face God, I'll just tell him that, well, this thing happened and you did this and you did this and you had the, you actually see this in atheistic arguments all the time. You know, Christopher Hitchens even talked about this a lot, that, and so has Richard Dawkins, that if they were to stand in front of God and have to explain themselves to him, they would project it back onto God and say, well, you did this, you did that, you know, kids get cancer and people die and there's all these horrible things in life. But when you get to that point, it's not going to work that way. I tend to think we will have very little to say. I tend to think that we're going to be so awestruck by the literal awesome holiness and perfection of God that we can't really fully grasp in this life, that we're not going to have any excuses. We might like to think that we will, because we're human now, and the only thing we can kind of compare God to is like a person, you know, like a person, and we would react to a person in that way. But however it's going to be, whatever that experience is actually going to be like, when we actually stand face to face with God, we're not going to have those excuses. I don't even think we're going to want to try to say them. I think it'll just be obvious at that point that it's foolish and it's futile. So Job seemed to understand that before, and that shows a lot of strength in Job, that he seemed to understand that when things were good. And we don't know a lot about Job's early life. We don't know if this was the first time he ever went through calamity. or chaos. It seems like it might have been, but we don't really know that. But somehow he was able to learn that lesson in prosperity and when things were going good. That's a big strength. And that's something we should do too. And we can learn a lot from that. When things are going good, that is the time to learn these lessons, because you don't want this stuff to take you by surprise. You don't want to be like Job's wife. You want to be like Job. I am doing a lot of commentary. Okay, so just get rid of my statement from before. Just forget that I said I'm not going to do very much commentary. Just get rid of that. I lied. Forgive me of my sin. I lied to all of you about that. I am going to do a lot of commentary. We'll conclude this after chapter 2, and we'll talk about the Shout of Turin in the weekly video. If you're watching the daily video, you'll either have to wait for another daily video, or you'll have to go check out the weekly video when it's up. Okay, so where'd we leave off? I think we're in verse 11 now, yes. All right, chapter 2, verse 11. Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was done, that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place. Eliphaz, the Temanite, and Bildad, the Shuhite, and Zophar, the Naamathite, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept. And they rent every one his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and seven nights, and none spake a word unto him, for they saw his grief was great. Kind of a modern analogy. Now at first, we'll continue on in chapter 3 next time, but, you know, at first his friends seem actually pretty nice, you know, and we see later that, you know, they're a little sketchy in their theology, but they sort of mean well, but God still rebukes them anyway. We find that out later. But we see that they mourn with him and they're silent with him. We don't typically mourn that way, but sometimes I think we should. In our modern culture, there's a lot of time, like, okay, When I have like a good friend or a family member who just had somebody die in their life that I didn't know, I don't ever know the right words to say in that situation. You know, I don't ever know, and you know it's tough. But being silent sometimes is the best thing. I mean, think about personal, and you know everybody has different personalities and everybody's a little different. But I know with me at least, when I've gone through, when I'm going through some type of really difficult thing, unless somebody is willing to present like a solution that'll get me out of it, I don't get a lot out of anything beyond you know I'm going to pray for you, sorry you're going through that, you know but I usually don't want to talk about it. I just want to get through it and then just get through the moment of chaos and then back, you know, learn from it and get back on. Now, when somebody can offer useful advice or a solution, then I want to hear about that. And then maybe that's why Job's friends were silent at first, because maybe they didn't know. And then you find out later that they're almost creating their own theology. We do that as Christians sometimes. When we don't know what to say, we'll start saying things like, well, God has a plan for everything, all things that God does has a purpose. And we talked about that in Chalk Talk. If I remember right, it was with Justin Fall and Donna Howell. So you can go to youtube.com/Chalk Talk Official and find that episode. You know, does everything happen for a reason? I think it was called something like that. But we find ourselves saying these things that we've heard before, and then we just kind of say them, but really we're creating our own theology. And we'll see Job's friends do that too, which is interesting. So keep that in mind for next time. You can help fight against censorship by making a one-time donation or setting up a monthly donation to Josh Peck Disclosure at joshpeckdisclosure.com/donate. Or for as little as $1 a month, you can become a Peck patron by heading over to patreon.com/joshpeck. As a Peck patron, you will be entered into contests to have your content featured on the Josh Peck Disclosure homepage, contribute chapters to a collaborative book with Josh Peck, and win a special Josh Peck collection full of materials worth hundreds of dollars. Also, for as little as $3 a month, you will have access to free downloads of Josh Peck books, such as Quantum Creation, Cherubim Chariots, and more. Josh Peck Disclosure is viewer-funded. Head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com for more information.
Right now, head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com, the central hub for everything Josh Peck Disclosure. Every day, you'll get brand new videos, podcasts, updates, and more. Make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Also, make sure you click the bell and select the option to always be notified when a new video is released. Follow Josh Peck Disclosure on Twitter at jpdisclosure and get involved with the show on our official Facebook page at facebook.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Disclosure. If you're on Steemit and prefer DTube, follow Josh Peck at steemit.com/@Josh Peck and make sure to upvote all Josh Peck Disclosure DTube videos. Keep checking back at joshpeckdisclosure.com for news, information, updates, and more.